We like to do things by the numbers. We're all about commerce and community. Welcome to The Upswing, presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now for the host that's always on The Upswing, Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, Milwaukee. Happy Tuesday. Hope your day is off and running well. Just a few notes to open the show. If you have 10 or 15 minutes after the show, of course, take time to read the Atlantic article today about, actually that dropped yesterday, about the administration's use of Signal, the messaging platform. It's fascinating on so many levels. I mean, we talk often about corporate communications and emails and texts on the show, but I wanted to just provide a little bit of background on Signal. It's developed by a company called Signal Messenger LLC, a software company that was founded by two individuals, Moxie Marlin Spike and Brian Action, in 2018. Now it's a wholly owned tax-exempt nonprofit corporation called Signal Technology Foundation that created this messaging app. So the platform is used now by many senior people in D.C., and the title of the story at The Atlantic that you're hearing about all day today, the Trump administration accidentally texted me its war plans. U.S. national security leaders included me in a group chat about the upcoming military strikes in Yemen. I didn't think it could be real. Then the bombs started falling. Take time. I'm not going to editorialize about it, but take time to read the story by Jeffrey Goldberg in The Atlantic. It is fascinating on so many levels. I'm reading a lot of Fast Company these days. Fast Company, the business publication founded in 1997. When it came out, it was really a new type of business magazine. Big, bold, a bit in your face with its storytelling. It's still incredibly relevant today, especially when it comes out with its annual Most Innovative Companies lists. This year's list includes a Milwaukee-based company. One of the owners of SRH will join us later in the show. So as I read and listen throughout the day, I learn a lot, too. So that's why we like to start every show with a segment we call Two Up.
Now it's time for the
Two Up
on The Upswing.
Number one, a little ticket talk for you, StubHub. Maybe you're looking to get tickets for an upcoming concert or sporting event. It's a leading secondary ticket marketplace. It's officially filed for an IPO with the SEC, aiming to list its Class A common stock on the New York Stock Exchange under the ticker STUB. I did a little digging into the revenue of the company. $1.77 billion in 2024. Almost a 30% increase from 2023. However, it had a net loss of $2.8 million. Why? Last year, the company spent $828 million on sales and marketing. Most of went to what it's called fixed and variable marketing and advertising expenses. This was on its SEC filing. That's 47% of the company's revenue. Even for marketing forward people like myself, that's a lot of money. StubHub facilitated over 40 million ticket sales in 2024, averaging $217 per ticket, and had almost a million sellers. StubHub faces a lot of competition from Ticketmaster, Vivid Seats, and other similar companies. So the IPO is definitely going to be an interesting test for not only investors, but kind of the broader market in the ticket retail space. Second up, a little macro micro from Hyundai. Hyundai yesterday announced a $20 billion investment in U.S. manufacturing and includes a $5 billion Louisiana steel plant. It's going to employ almost 1,300 people. The best way for Hyundai to navigate tariffs is to increase localization. This was according to Hyundai CEO Jose Munoz that he told Axios yesterday. I think this is good news, but as a country, we need to continue to play the long game here, right? We want to bring back industrial strength, couple things that we need to do. We need to invest more in advanced training for skilled trades and automation technology. We need to really look at providing long-term tax and capital incentives for domestic
production. And we need to treat reshoring,
excuse me,
as a 20-year national strategy across all parties and all politics. Coming up next, come and play. Everything's okay. Can you tell me how to get to Sesame Street?
This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Hey, WTMJ fans, have you been keeping up with the basketball madness happening? Well, there's more to come this week and weekend with only 16 teams remaining. Our friends at Palermo's are doing a contest giveaway, and we want you to participate. All you have to do is go to the WTMJ Facebook page and find the post that asks what four teams you think will be the last four remaining. The winner will receive 10 free pizza coupons. Yes, 10 free Palermo's pizza coupons. Go join the madness. Thanks to the good people at Palermo's Pizza. The good people at Palermo's Pizza. You know where else there are great people? Sesame Street Workshop. But I'm a little concerned, so I had to bring this story to your attention, talk it through, and provide some ideas. All right. So here's the landscape. Sherry Weston is a 27-year veteran of the Sesame Workshop. She became chief executive officer last year. Sesame Street Workshop is losing its lucrative contract with HBO, which has paid about $30 million a year for a decade for the rights to the show. With Hollywood suddenly watching all of its pennies, it's not as much coin in the coffers right now. So HBO is walking away from the deal, leaving Sesame Workshop with a decision. What do you do with this amazing, historical, relevant, educational content? Bunch of things that I think Sesame Street can look into. First, just a little bit about what the people at Sesame Street Workshop are saying. This isn't a rejection of Sesame Street, and Sesame Street is not going away, said the CEO, but we absolutely have a responsibility to change the world around us as it's changing if we want to continue to deliver on our mission. And that's exactly what's happening in the content space, especially on the kids side, right? If you have kids or grandkids at home, Sesame Street's probably a part of that daily watch. But the landscape has changed so much. You have Bluey, you have Coco Melon. Is Caillou still around? I think Caillou's still playing in the space too. So Sesame Street controls its own destiny in terms of what it wants to do. But the funding isn't going to be there at the high levels anymore. But is there an ideal partner out there? I did some thinking about what the next steps of Sesame Street Workshop could be. Obviously, the company wants financial stability to support the show's production costs, right? A commitment to educational content for children is first and foremost in their mind. They want wide reach. They want to ensure that Sesame Street remains accessible to as many kids as possible. So who's the ideal partner? A few thoughts. Maybe Apple TV Plus, Amazon Prime, Netflix. How about YouTube? To syndicate the show through its platform. And then you have the free streaming services out there like Tubi and Sling and Roku. Now, Tubi is owned by the Fox Corporation, which means it can pull from Fox's large library of film and TV, but it could really work well to include the Sesame Street content within its realm. How about this, though? Just an idea I'm going to throw out there. Sesame Street needs a partner. They need somebody with reach. They need somebody with fans from age 2 to age 92. How about this? How about Sesame Street Workshop looks to partner with the NFL? How about the NFL buying the license rights to Sesame Street? The partnership, simply, right? could help Sesame Street overcome its current distribution challenges, some of its financial issues, and then it provides the NFL with a unique opportunity to diversify its content and audiences. What do you think? What do you think? The Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line is 855-616-1620. Are you still watching Sesame Street in your household? What and how can the company continue to get its relevant educational messages out there in a new manner, but with a new partner? I'm saying go where the fans already are, go where the content is already great, but go where a big company needs access to younger fans and create an ongoing, stable pipeline. No matter what, if you're passionate about Sesame Street Workshop, you can always donate to Sesame Street Workshop, which is a nonprofit organization. So take the time out of your day if that's something you want to do. I think it's important that Sesame Street continues in some way, shape, or form, whether it's Max, whether it's just on PBS, whether it's YouTube, whatever that distribution model is. I think it's a very, very interesting time for Sesame Street, and we're going to see how these changing media landscapes affect educational programming for our kids. Coming up next, the Upswing Coffee Index and an update on Mob Craft Brewing. This is the Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ.
Anything ragged or rotten or rusty? Yes, I love trash.
If you really want to see something trashy.
Is that coffee?
That's it. I'm getting 100 cups of coffee, starting now.
Time for a quick look at your coffee and how much it costs. It's the Upswing's Coffee Index.
Smells good.
Welcome back to the Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Where'd you get your morning coffee? I'm always keeping an eye out on prices for you. I want to make sure that, you know, the budget doesn't get broken. Your brackets are probably broken, but I'm going to keep that budget in line. Stopped at a Starbucks this morning. I got the Sunsera blend, just a 12-ounce blonde roast, $2.65, which is about 10 cents cheaper than some of the local varieties that I'm seeing. So maybe Starbucks is playing that local, national, macro, micro game a little bit too. So $2.65, 22-cent tax, got out of there for $2.87. Speaking of coffee and fast company, if you want to, maybe I shouldn't admit this, but if you want to admit your age really quickly, Fast Company says, if you order hot black coffee, you're showing your age a little bit because Gen Z is flipping the script. Again, saw this on Fast Company this morning on how coffee is consumed. And the spoiler alert here is that Gen Z is saying it's cold brew, it's sweet, and it's loaded with a ton of creamer. For a lot of young drinkers, that first cup of coffee isn't that hot coffee, right? It's iced. And the stat that Fast Company pulled, 85% of Gen Z coffee fans are now adding creamer, compared to about 60, 70% of coffee drinkers overall. So that shift is kind of making waves. So if you're going to look for innovation and new products in the next couple of years on the shelves, look for the big companies that are doing creamers to offer new flavors and just a ton more options in that space, because it's driving a ton of new consumption. And they know they have good big customers in Starbucks. Speaking of drink business, I wanted to update you on a story that we've talked about plenty here on the Upswing. Mob Craft Beer, about the brewery in Milwaukee's Walker's Point neighborhood. A couple has purchased the business for $160,000, according to reporting at the Milwaukee Business Journal. Sarah and Mike Halstead plan to reopen Mob Craft Beer sometime this spring. Sarah is a former employee at Mob Craft Beer, and this comes just 4 months after Mob Craft closed its doors. So it's good to see former employees kind of diving in, working with the owners and saying, hey, there's an opportunity for us to bring this place back to life. It's a 14,000 square foot facility. They have a 5-year lease right over there on Fifth Street in Milwaukee's Walker's Point. Another thing they're going to add that they've used in the past, but they're going to dedicate sidewalk dining, another almost 1,500 square feet there. I think that innovation needs to continue all across the area, sidewalk dining and adding places for people to eat and drink and hang out outside. Sarah Halstead said that an opening date is kind of dependent upon all the approvals they have to do, but the company is aiming for early spring, which I'm guessing is probably going to be end of May, maybe early June. All right, we haven't done Elon and Mark Cuban in a while. I need to bring you up to speed on what both of them are doing online.
It's time for Musk.
Nobody's going to bat 1,000. You know, we will make mistakes, but we'll act quickly to correct any mistakes.
Versus Cuban.
If after you left Microsoft, you found out that Steve Ballmer traded Windows 11 for Windows 10, the Hall of Fame that holds it.
On the upswing.
Go!
Mark Cuban on his preferred platform, Blue Sky, is weighing in on crypto and cryptocurrency. Acting SEC chair is urging a crypto reset of sorts. Classification shouldn't be courtroom chaos. That's what the acting U.S. Securities and Exchange Commissioner chair is saying as he led an inaugural session of the agency's crypto task force roundtable this week. He used the occasion to urge the commission to move away from regulation through enforcement when dealing with crypto assets. Cuban analyzed this story, thought a little bit, and merely replied, if Biden would have approached crypto this way, via regulation rather than litigation, young men would have seen their net worth skyrocket and would have voted for Harris. Gary Gensler is why Harris lost young men and the election. Always being a little political without being real political. That's Mark Cuban on social. Over to Elon Musk. A big account on X, Doge Designer. This guy has 1.1 million followers. He showed a picture of Elon thinking, saying, but then I started thinking about Mars. Elon replied to that account saying, I do drift off into thinking about Mars at all times. That's where Elon's head's about. That's his big vision. He wants to get to Mars. That's in everything he does. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. So, Fast Company. I've been talking a lot about Fast Company on today's show. Its new Most Innovative Companies list is out. It's 609 organizations that are reshaping industries and culture. They selected companies that are making big impacts across 58 categories. Now, the publishers and the editors of the publication find companies that they think are the biggest and brightest. And then there's a submission side that companies can submit. And then the publishers and editors say, wow, let's pick the best from this list. So I'm reading through the most innovative companies in film and television list for 2025. I'm seeing FX, owned by Disney. I'm seeing Pixar, owned by Disney. I'm seeing Netflix. And then I go to number 10 and I see a company called SRH. I'm like, SRH. Let's go to my AI platform of preference, maybe Perplexity, and see. Whoa, yes, that indeed is Milwaukee-based SRH. Matt Sabljak, one of the partners and founders of SRH, joins us in studio. Matt, I really appreciate your time. Before we talk about the Fast Company Award, just tell us what SRH is, and congratulations.
Oh, well, thanks, Jeff. And sure. Do we have to disclose that you were my first boss?
I think we may have to, but we can go back and tell that story in a minute.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we've been for 10 years an ad agency here in Milwaukee that's like aspiring to it. And I think one of the questions is always like, an ad agency is an ad agency is an ad agency. But like, right. What are you about, right? And what we're about is fame. And when I say fame, I mean We believe that every brand should strive to like be famous in their category. Fame has a magic, a sizzle to it that's bigger than like brand awareness or engagement, right? It's like, it's being distinctive, it's being recognized, it's being worthy to be talked about. And we've done that for a lot of brands here locally, Harley Davidson, the Green Bay Packers, Children's Wisconsin, et cetera, and then doing it nationally as well. And the three of us founders are also filmmakers.
Okay.
And we wanted to find a way from the beginning to make films and make films famous.
And SRH stands for yourself and your two business partners.
Sablejack, Ravenwood, Hogerden. Yep.
All right. So a lot of, I mean, we worked in media and marketing together way back in our onmilwaukee.com days. And I always saw that kind of spark of creativity and just always thinking about what's next. And I've always admired that about you, Matt. When you think about marketing and advertising, there's so much thought in the space, like, all right, half of it works, half of it doesn't. Where do you put your money? How do you make those investments? What have you done it as an agency to kind of package that retelling of the marketing story?
Well, first, we've spent a lot of time, like, for let's go to like the field of medicine, which is very science-based, we hope, right? And they have the American Medical Journal, right? And that is where the latest research on therapies, techniques, et cetera, are published. And you hope that your doctor is reading these so he's up to date on what the latest treatments are and diagnostics. In the marketing world, there is a whole body of research. We call it empirical marketing. That's just our little kind of spin on marketing effectiveness.
Okay.
So there are marketing scientists out there who are actually running longitudinal experiments and trying to understand how does loyalty work? How do people really choose and why do they choose the brands that they choose? And so we've been looking at a lot of that data that I think a lot of American agencies aren't paying attention to because a lot of it isn't coming out of America, and repackaging that into tools and principles and techniques for our clients. And again, I'd bring it all back to, it's true, 50% of advertising doesn't work. In fact, there's a report that just came out. Sorry to jump on you, Jeff.
No,
that just
that's
said,
right.
50% of ads are less emotionally engaging than cows chewing grass.
All right. But, you know, that still works in some capacity. But the companies want the ROI, and that's what you have to do as an agency, right? You have to take care of teammates and partners and make the creative work. So tomorrow, Matt, Fortune releases its most innovative companies list. Be interesting to see who's on that list. When we come back, we're going to talk about the top five companies on the Fast Company list. I also was really intrigued that, why? Not just for their innovation. Why did SRH make this list? It's got something to do with beavers, right?
It's got something to do with beavers.
Yeah. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Fast Company is out with its list of most innovative companies, some handpicked by the business magazine's editors and publishers, others selected from nominated companies like Milwaukee-based SRH. Quickly, the top five from Fast Company: Waymo, NVIDIA, Nubank, the WNBA, and BYD, Chinese electric vehicle manufacturer, obviously all doing incredibly innovative things in their own rights, for sure. But let's talk about SRH and its inclusion in the film and television list for the publication. Matt Sablejack, partner and president of the firm, joins us in studio. So, Matt, one of the major reasons you're included on the list is a film that your company worked on called Hundreds of Beavers. Really creative, super funny, but that independent film space, it's tough. And how do you build kind of a, maybe not the perfect world, but a cult following for an independent film? And how do you spur release with creativity? Because I'm guessing that's why your firm landed up on this list.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic. Like, we're on this most innovative list, and you just rattled off those companies. And it's largely due to a 108-minute black-and-white silent slapstick comedy film, you know, that was made on a shoestring budget, right?
Yeah.
Like, and you don't start there and go, like, wow, that's really innovative, right? But the way that we – and one, I've just got to give a shout-out to the filmmakers, Mike Cheslick, Ryland Twos, you know, my partners, Kurt and Sam, the way that we, one, we couldn't find a distributor for this film because it's so, such an oddball, you know? And so we had to figure out how we're going to do it on our own. And I think that what got us on this list is the fact that we approach this like we would building a brand, which is top down, bottom up. Top down, we were always going after write-ups in the New York Times, the LA Times, you know, Vanity Fair, et cetera. That stuff really still matters because it reaches huge audiences.
Exactly, right.
In fact, you don't think of innovation when you think of the Associated Press, but when we got an AP pickup, it was a huge deal. And then the bottom-up thing was we were relentless on social with engagement. We did hundreds of parody posters for the film. You know, we did a road show through the Midwest. Instead of launching this film on the coast, we did like a 13, 14 city road show complete with like live in theater stunts. And I think what really got us to where, got us on this list and made this film famous was like our willingness to do things that most studios just aren't willing to do to get a film popular.
Yeah, I mean, to really be in the trenches and to spur creativity. The film's about a drunken Applejack salesman and kind of his ongoing battle with an army of beavers, right?
Beavers played by mascots.
Mascots in beaver costumes. So it's the premise, obviously a little wacky and lends itself to creativity, but you got to lean into that. And so when you think about that creativity and your success there, how do you see it influencing films in the future? And then how do you use it for your current clients?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're now, thanks to the success of Hundreds of Beavers, like we're now meeting with filmmakers who have, you know, original, interesting, not reverse engineered. Let's start with like what's popular and whether where the audience is, but like truly art, like Hundreds of Beavers, I think really is. It's like cinema, and helping them go, okay, well, how are you going to find an audience with your film now? Right. And bringing the same toolbox and tactics to it, which is like, okay, well, we've got to find these niche communities that are really likely to champion this film. We've got to target them digitally. We've got to get in theaters and create a live social experience, you know? And then we've got to allure people in the same way that indie, I think it's a lot more like an indie band mentality than it is a film mentality, selling merch, et cetera.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
And on the client side of things, I mean, this is the toolbox that we work, you know, the building fame toolbox of being really distinctive. You know, I look at it like WMD. It's like worthy of remembering, being moving and being distinctive, right? Like something that's really memorable, something that has an emotional attachment or inspiration to it, and then something that's distinctive. It's not going to be mistaken for something else, right? It's not generic. It's not going to, oh, what is that film? It's kind of like that other film. Nobody ever forgets Hundreds of Beavers.
Yeah. It's a crowded marketplace, and you got to do the unique things to stand out. We're talking with Matt Sablejack, president and partner at SRH, one of Fast Company's most innovative companies. When we come back, we'll dive in a bit more into what does great branding mean and what are some of Matt's habits and daily routines that helps him stay sharp and creative in his role. I'm Jeff Sherman. This is The Upswing, and you are listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, SRH, coming in at number 10 on Fast Company's most innovative film and television companies, located right here, just outside of beautiful downtown Milwaukee in Milwaukee's Walker's Point neighborhood. So SRH has this independent film, Hundreds of Beavers, that it produced. The film cost about $150,000 to make, taking in more than $1 million in revenue through creative marketing and more. You wonder, and I wondered, all right, you land on this most innovative list, Matt. Now, what do you do with this film now that it, I mean, it's truly a part of the agency? How do you continue to scale it, to get more distribution and make sure more and more people are seeing it? What does that look like for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, we're in the midst of a 40 plus city tour of theatrical screenings and live shows, et cetera, in the UK right now, all sold out. There's Blu-rays. There's going to be a vinyl release of the soundtrack, right?
All right. Like, old school. I like it.
Yeah, yeah. And it just like, this is a timeless film. And so we can just keep, like, there's just ways to keep it alive and new stuff coming out over and over and over again.
Right? I mean, maybe even a modern day Rocky Horror Picture Show to an extent. I mean, films like that that are still, no matter the generation, there's appeal there to see at certain times and build community and dress up and be participatory. I mean, that's what the economy wants in the film space. And I see that through what you guys are doing.
Yeah, I think we have, and we did this very intentionally, given people a really compelling reason to go to a theater, you know, and buckle up and have a fun ride. I think where a lot of movies are struggling are they're dramas that, candidly, whether you watch them in your home or you watch them in a movie theater, I don't know how much that, you know, as a film lover, sometimes that experience isn't that much different.
Yeah.
But like Hundreds of Beavers in a packed theater with a bunch of people that are laughing along to it is a blast. It's a unique experience.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we talk about on this show. Community and commerce. They go together, yep. And they work better when they're working together each and every day. That's economics 101. So when you get up each and every morning, and I love to ask CEOs this question, what are some of the habits and routines that just keep you in that creative space? Because it's we all got a lot of things on our plate. We all are being pulled this way or that way. But what does that look like for you, Matt?
Yeah, as a newish dad, so I've got an 11-month-old boy.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And my wife, Tana, and I split time between here and the Pacific Northwest, where she's from. I really rely on curation, you know? So it's like reading the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times every day, getting both sides of the news and getting, I think they have incredible critics. The New Yorker magazine is a huge source for me for stories and for film criticism, for television criticism. And then I think one of the most important things is just surrounding myself with people who are going to share things with me that would never come across my my browsing, my social feeds, my Google alerts, et cetera, my Substacks. I can't overstate that. Weird stuff shared by friends and how influential it's been for me.
Yeah, being open to those messages from different sources helps spur that creative mind for sure. Just quickly, a campaign or initiative that you're working on locally that you're super proud of.
Yeah, I think all the work that we've done with the Children's Wisconsin Foundation, you know, around their whole health, social, physical, and mental, you know, helping them through our work raise tens of millions of dollars, you know, for like the Craig Ibuki walk-in clinic. And then Rally Round is the big signature event that's coming up. And we've had the privilege to participate in that. That'll be in September. And hopefully it'll be the signature event for Children's Wisconsin moving forward.
Matt Sabeljack, president and partner at SRH, one of the most innovative companies with Fast Company, located right here in beautiful Milwaukee. Matt, I appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks,
Jeff. All the best in the future.
These are your business headlines from the Milwaukee Business Journal.
The NCAA men's basketball tournament returns to Pfizer Forum. This was the first time Milwaukee hosted rounds of the tournament since 2022, when the event saw an attendance of 25,000 people and an economic impact of $6.5 million. A Taco Pros restaurant is opening in West Milwaukee. The West Milwaukee location is the fifth Taco Pros to open in the Milwaukee area. Milwaukee Area Technical College is adding a 2,000-square-foot biology lab and virtual reality classroom. The project will cost an estimated $1.5 million and be completed by August. I'm Logan Hansen for MilwaukeeBusinessJournal.com on 620 WTMJ.